Good afternoon, and welcome to Who's in the Kitchen. You're listening to WDRT 91.9 FM from Viroqua, Wisconsin, the Driftless area, southwestern Wisconsin. And we also are on the internet at WDRT.org. And you can listen live streaming on the internet if you're out of our range, which is about 25 to 30 miles. But you can listen all over the world, basically, thanks to the internet. And we have podcasts of previous shows. So you can go to, archives. You can go to archives and you can look up locally produced shows, Who's in the Kitchen, and you can listen to this show or other shows that have been done probably about 2 or 3 months in the past. Now we've got a lot of archival material if you missed a show and want to hear it again. So today we're going to talk about canning. I've been wanting to do this, and I finally got a friend of mine who has been just doing a big mountain of canning, and so she's going to be on the show today. So some of you who are doing canning or have been spending the last month putting away food, I hope you'll join us. So welcome, Peg. This is Peg Winky.
Hello.
Nice
day.
Yes, it's nice to have you on the show. This is by phone. So Peg lives down in rural Boscobel, and she's been doing a lot of canning. So what have you been processing?
Well, let's see. We've already put up stewed tomatoes with zucchini, and we've done ratatouille and some Sicilian caponata. Some beets in water, spaghetti with ground beef, mushrooms, and onions and garlic. And we've done spiced peaches, two different recipes, comparing them with each other to see which was the better one. We did spirited peaches last night with peach schnapps. They turned out real well. We've done apple butter. And we've done some nice freezing of butternut squash and acorn squash and freezing of eggplant.
Now, Peg, why are you doing all this putting up of, what inspires you to do this?
Well, I did write down a note for you on that. I am allergic to a lot of foods. And I'm allergic to a lot of preservatives. So, and I have chronic kidney disease, which says I'm supposed to avoid the phosphates. So there's phosphates in a lot of canned goods and frozen foods from the grocery store.
Why? What do they do?
They destroy your kidneys.
I know, but why do they put them in the food?
I don't know why they do, but that's what my kidney specialist told me I had to avoid was the phosphates in the frozen and canned foods because they were making my kidneys worse.
Oh, my goodness. Well, so that wasn't a reason that I thought of canning. But I think that's really a good reason, is you really want to avoid the preservatives and additives that are in prepared foods.
Right, and originally I started canning because of the allergies to the different things that I'm allergic to in a lot of different foods that they could put in there that I would react to. But then when the chronic kidney disease came along and the phosphates were found to be in all that stuff, almost every canned good and every frozen food has the phosphates in it. So this year it was more important that I can and freeze as much as I could myself without all those additives.
Are phosphates also in soft drinks and carbonated drinks?
They could be. So the only thing I drink is Propel water.
Yes, I know you were very careful about the water, bottled water you were drinking.
Yeah, the only one I drink is Propel with zero sugar and electrolytes in it.
I see. Okay. So you really are paying attention to your health and medical requirements.
Right. I'm a type 2 diabetic, and I'm in stage 3 of chronic kidney disease, and I am avoiding at all that I can to not go to type 4 and have one of those shunts put in my arm to go on dialysis.
Oh, gosh, yes.
And this is one of the best ways that I can do it, is to put up as much food for us that I know there's nothing in it except what I'm putting in it.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you avoid sugar in canning?
Okay, well, I'm not avoiding sugar totally, putting it in it. But the only sugar that's going in is basically in the sweeter stuff. But I am doing some low sugar things. I have made low sugar apple butter and low sugar apple sauce.
So does that mean using a sugar substitute, or does that mean you're using the lighter syrup? Or
I've done lighter syrup, but I've also, one of the spiced peach recipes we made was a combination of sugar and honey, which was because the honey is better for a diabetic than the sugar.
Okay.
So it had you combine those.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other was a combination of white and brown sugar.
Okay.
And actually, the two recipes also had a difference in the type of cider vinegar that was in them, and the amount of cider vinegar. And actually, the one with white vinegar one and brown sugar won out over the cider vinegar and honey. And as for taste, the one recipe had like 5 cups of cider vinegar in it, and the other recipe had like 2 tablespoons of white vinegar.
Oh, my goodness. Well, the vinegar would really make it more like a pickle.
Well, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But both of them made extremely nice extra syrup that is wonderful over vanilla ice cream.
Well, that's a nice byproduct.
and over French toast.
Oh, good. That's what I can do with my leftover pear syrup. Well,
And one of them had cloves in it,
mm-hmm.
and allspice, and the other one had allspice and nutmeg, and mm-hmm. the allspice and nutmeg won over the cloves and allspice.
Yeah, cloves can be rather dominating.
Well, the cloves and cider vinegar was more dominating.
Mm-hmm.
But it did make the stronger syrup to go over the vanilla ice cream.
Mm-hmm. Well, Peg, where are you getting your recipes? Just what are the different sources? Do you go to the internet?
Some of them I get from the internet, and some are coming from the latest ball canning book, which is now a hardcover, regular type cookbook, not their older paper one.
Mm-hmm.
They have a real thick kind of spiral cookbook now.
You can't take
the pages out, which is too bad, but it is a nice big one with lots of interesting recipes. Now, the ratatouille I got off the internet. Father that I worked for really wanted some ratatouille, which I didn't even know what it was, and it's a French stew. So I looked one up and made ratatouille for the first time this year. And it turned out so good, I had to keep a little for myself and then made them like 14 jars.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I don't know if you have this at your fingertips, but can you tell us how you make ratatouille?
Well, no, I'd have to go look up the recipe, but it does have to be pressure canned because it has eggplant in it. and some other things. It doesn't have any meat in it because the monks are vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
But it had peppers in it and spices and eggplant, all sorts of vegetables.
Zucchini, I'm sure.
Yeah, zucchini and eggplant and yellow peppers, I think. I'm not sure.
So
it was a lot to put it together.
Well, did you saute them or roast the vegetables, or how did you make it in the first place?
No, it was all cut up and then pressure cooked.
Okay, so you cooked them first and then you put them in the jars, or did you raw pack?
No. No. They had to be stewed and then put in the jars.
Okay. And then for the low acid vegetables, you really do have to use the pressure cooker.
Yeah, and it had tomatoes in it too.
Okay, right. Probably garlic.
A lot of garlic.
Right. So
and,
yeah.
And a lot of other things. and the weirdest one we made was one that Marina, one of the ladies that volunteers at the monastery, wanted, which turns out to taste kind of like a salsa and nothing I would ever eat in my life. It's a Sicilian recipe called caponata, and it had capers in it and yellow peppers and everything else I would never eat. And we had to cook that, and we made several of them, so because she wanted to send them to her daughters and son, and we did several of them for the monks also. And my husband decided he liked them to put on tostada chips.
Oh, okay. I wondered what it ended up being used for. Kind of
well,
like a salsa.
I would never eat it. I tasted it and it was like yuck.
What's the texture?
Like a salsa.
Mm-hmm.
And chunky and way too spicy.
Oh, I see. Well, what about the ratatouille? Was that chunky, or did that cook to mush?
It was chunky but soft. It was soft enough for meat, and we had a leftover partial jar, and so one night I did warm that up as our vegetable with a hamburger, and it was quite tasty. I was surprised. I didn't think I would eat it.
Well, I wondered. I mean, I've made ratatouille before and thought of it as a main dish, but I don't really like it as a main dish. Maybe it's better to have it as kind of a side or a topping on a, you know, hamburger or something.
Well, when Father ate it, he says he eats it on top of noodles or rice.
Mm. Okay.
Now, the recipe didn't talk about it as being served on top of something. It calls it a French stew.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, I just ate it as a small side dish with a hamburger on the side.
Okay.
I just eat the hamburger as a patty, not with any bread.
Right. Well, now, Peg, where did you get all these fruits and vegetables? Do you grow them all, or did you get them from friends?
Well, the Beats, the Amish couples that lived near us, gave me about a bushel of beets. She was tired of canning beets. So she gave me the rest that were in her garden, so that was my first time canning beets. And you gave me a ton of pears.
Right.
And the monastery had all these apples that they thought tasted like potatoes because they tried them raw and had never realized that they were good cooking apples.
Oh.
And they are wonderful cooking apples.
And they're huge.
So
they're
right.
Huge.
And
I don't.
So
yeah.
Vern and I have picked them and made apple butter with them, and we're going to make applesauce and more apple butter with them. And the peaches we bought from the Amish in town, and we just bought another bushel this week, or a half bushel this week.
Mm-hmm.
No, we bought two half bushels this week. And
tomatoes.
Tomatoes we bought from the Amish.
Mm-hmm. So you don't really have a big garden, or do you have a garden at all?
Well, we raised eggplant, and we raised a lot of acorn squash.
Oh, okay.
So all the acorn squash we raised, and we've got about 8 more growing.
So why did you decide to freeze your squash? Can't you just keep it in the basement or something?
I don't know. It said you could keep it for a while, but the best way to keep it over the winter was to roast it, cut it in half and roast it, and then take the squash out and seal it in a sealer meal bag, and it would keep for 8 months frozen.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so then I can try and turn it into like butternut soup. I'm going to try that with the butternut that I bought and with the acorn.
Well, that's really, it really makes a good soup. I just had a bowl of butternut squash soup at the St. Francis Hermitage near Soldiers Grove.
Yes.
And it was just delicious. And I kind of, I always put curry powder and either apple or orange juice in my butternut squash soup, but this was more, I guess, a French style, but it was mild. It was very, very pleasant, and they kind of stirred in cream or sour cream and a nice swirl on the top and a wide bowl, and it was just very lovely. So you don't have to make curried squash soup. Maybe some people wouldn't even like that, but it is a lovely soup to have in the winter. And
well, I probably wouldn't like the curry, but mm-hmm. I do want to make some squash soup, that's why I froze both the acorn and the butternut squash that I picked up to try and do that.
I'm sure they will be good. And those, and it's good to freeze because, again, you'd have to spend a good long time canning that because, again, it's low acid. It's
right.
Probably better to just freeze it. I once bought a banana squash at one of the outdoor markets on the way to Madison.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so excited, and I saved the seeds, and then I planted banana squash in my garden. And the banana squash are like small submarines. I mean, one squash could feed an entire huge family Thanksgiving dinner, and then you have another 20 in the garden. They are just gigantic, and they're very fine. They have a nice fine texture. They're not stringy at all. They're
mm-hmm.
sweet. They're very pleasant, but they're so prolific, you really only need one plant. I probably had a dozen. I tried to sell them at the farmer's market, and people were almost scared to buy one. They were so big, and they thought, well, maybe they weren't good, but they were delicious. So I really did end up pureeing and freezing a lot of that. And
I put in three acorn squashes, and, mm-hmm. and they've been prolific.
Yeah, right. And, of course, they make good pie, too. You can make a squash pie as well as a pumpkin pie.
I haven't tried to make a squash pie, but I've probably gotten enough acorn squash to do that. I've donated some to the monastery, and I've given some to other people, and you're still welcome to have some acorns.
that would be wonderful. Well, I wanted to know you keep saying we. I know you have a partner who has been helping you, and friends, but you have a husband who has been very supportive and helpful for you doing all this processing. So
if he wasn't doing it, I wouldn't be able to do all this stuff.
Yeah, you told me you kind of divvied up the task. So what does your husband do?
Well, Vern does a lot of the heavy work. He, of course, moves the big pots of water and carries the pressure cookers back and forth. But the biggest part he does is while I'm at work, he will take whatever food it is we're going to can, and he will blanch it and peel it during the day.
Wow.
So that when I get home from work, he's got, if it's got to be cut up, it's blanched, peeled, and sliced.
That's the worst and longest part, I think.
It is. So then it's ready to, and if it needs to be stewed, it's already stewed.
My goodness. That's wonderful. He also helps you pick.
Well, yes, with the pears and the apples. He picked the apples by putting a stepladder on the back of his truck and picking the apples at the monastery.
Oh, yeah. Some of those big trees, it's hard to reach the fruit. And, you
right.
know, if you don't want to get fallen fruit, if you want to get it straight off the tree, you got to have ladders. So that was a good,
And he did method. He did the most of the picking up of the pears at your place. I'm not able to do a lot of that kind of stuff.
Well, I know. It's a lot of bending over, and my pear tree just dropped and dropped and dropped pears. So a lot of the pears were grounders, but I think if you get them right away, you know, blanch them, peel them, they're fine. But after a few days, if they've dropped and they were ripe, they usually have a soft spot, and they also have bees in them. But I think I had about 10 different families that came this year and carted away pears, and there are many, many more that went on the compost pile. It was they were so prolific, just two trees. And the brand of pear is called Luscious, and they really are luscious, aren't they?
Oh,
they're just wonderful pears. So very, very bountiful, and I'm glad that you got some. So one of the things you did is you not only canned peaches and pears, but you experimented a little bit with spirits. So tell us about that.
Well, I found some recipes where you add some alcohol to bring out the flavor of the fruit. And that's all it's trying to do is enhance the flavor.
Mm-hmm.
So the peaches we did last night, the suggestion was to add a teaspoon and a half to an 8-ounce jar of peaches to add peach schnapps.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we did last night. Now we have more pears, and the pears we're going to add cream de menthe to. And we will do some of those probably this weekend.
Mm-hmm. I want to know how those taste. I just can't imagine the mint and the pears. Maybe that is good. Maybe that is good. I'll just, you know, I want to taste that.
Well, the other one that we won't be able to do this year, and it sounds good, is they want you to combine apricots with amaretto.
Oh, now that sounds nice. We just don't have apricots around here, do we?
Well, Vern says they do grow around here, mm-hmm. but we wouldn't be able to get them this time of year.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So maybe next year. But mm-hmm. I do drink a little amaretto at night
mm-hmm.
sometimes. But the peaches with peach schnapps, we had a pint of extra after we filled the jars it was supposed to fill,
mm-hmm.
and no more would fit in the canning pot. So we tasted some of those last night. He had some over vanilla ice cream.
Mm-hmm. I think
during
those
in the middle of the night, he didn't tell me after he'd let it sit for a while, and he said it was wonderful.
I think that would be good on French toast, a little bit of the fruit with a little bit of a, you know, schnapps. That would be wonderful. What a brunch.
There's no alcohol left after you can it. It's just that the peach flavor out of the alcohol or whatever is enhancing the flavor of the
right.
peach.
Oh, it sounds wonderful. Yes. Well, now let's see. We have some different methods of canning. Some things you can just put cold packed into jars, which is where the way I often do tomatoes. Just once they've been peeled, then I just put them raw into jars. Now, I don't think you did any cold packing, did you?
No, I've never done any cold packing. Mm-hmm.
Well, with tomatoes, that works pretty well. And you just put a little bit of salt, you know, half teaspoon of salt in the top, and seal them up, and then you can water bath can them.
You don't put any lemon juice in?
Well, if you have a low-acid tomato, you're supposed to do that. The red tomatoes are usually acidic enough, but like the orange ones, I've been told they are sweeter and less acidic, and you do have to add lemon juice or vinegar. A teaspoon.
Yeah, I've read that none of the tomatoes in years are acidic enough, and Ball has always said for the last many, many years that you had to add lemon juice to your tomatoes.
Okay.
So I've been adding lemon juice and salt probably for 20 years to every one of my jars of tomatoes.
Well, that is a really good point, Pig, because... Pig. Yes, Pig.
Yes, Pig.
That's one reason to really follow a recipe or to get yourself a Ball canning jar, because it really does take into account, any kind of... dangers in canning, and because you really don't want any kind of bacteria or botulism to grow in your canned goods. And so it's really good to have instructions, and don't just pop a bunch of green beans into a jar and think that that's going to be safe. And
right.
So having a good canning book, I mean, so many of us have had that old Ball canning book for years. Mine's just, you know, all stained and torn. I'm looking forward to seeing the new Ball canning book, but I've just referred to it for so many things, safety reasons, health reasons, and the temperatures, the times, because if you pressure can tomatoes, they only take about, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes. But if you water bath can, they really need to go for like 40 minutes. And then it depends on the size of the jar and so forth. And each vegetable is different and each fruit is different. I've cold packed pears and just poured a hot syrup over them and then water bath canned them.
Right.
So it's, if you haven't canned before, it's really a good idea to have a book or recipes online. So now you there's the cold. This cold packing means you just take the raw vegetables and you pack them, or the fruit, and so that takes particular instructions. Then there is the pre-cooking, say stewing the tomatoes or cooking the pears or peaches or so forth, and then canning those. And some things really can't be water bath canned, so that's another thing where you really need to know, do I need to pressure cook this?
Right. And I had a thing about the pressure cooking. I was a little upset with Presto when I bought the pressure cookers. And they come with, and I don't know if you know this, they come with a 15-pound rocker. So it rocks at 15 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are only certain things that you pressure cook at 15 pounds.
Oh.
If a lot of the fruits cook at 10 pounds, so the 15-pound rocker is not going to rock at 10 pounds.
Oh.
So you have to watch it studiously to keep it at 10 pounds.
And that's why people have a little bit of a fear of pressure cookers.
Okay, well, right. Mm-hmm. We found that you could buy a 5, 10, 15-pound rocker.
Okay.
That costs you $25.
Yikes.
And I think that Presto ought to sell their pressure cooker with the 5, 10, 15-pound rocker.
Of course.
It has little round weights on it, and you take it apart and put the weights on that you're going to need.
Right.
So you put it on with the 10-pound rocker weight if you're going to can at 10 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And then it rocks at 10 pounds.
Yeah.
And it doesn't go above 10 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Now, the pressure canner I have is, I think it's a Presto, but it's a really old one. And it's very large. It will hold like 7 jars, I guess. And it has a meter on the top.
Yeah.
Instead of a rocker, I can't remember now. Maybe it does, I don't know. But you can tell the pressure by the meter on it, too. And then just turn down your heat to keep it the same. Right.
Right. But mine has that too. But there's a rocker that will tell you that will keep it steady at the right one.
I see. So the rocker does keep it steady at the pound pressure.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
So if you have the 15-pound mm-hmm. one on, it will rock steady at 15, and you don't need to go back and forth with lowering and raising the heat.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted it 10 pounds, the 15-pound one won't let you know that it's going up and down.
I know.
But if you put a 10-pound rocker on it, you don't have to know that. It will rock when it's at 10 pounds, and you'll have it at the right heat.
Well, thank you for explaining that to me. I haven't even used my pressure cooker for a long time.
Well, I never had one before this year, and we bought
mm-hmm.
two.
Mm-hmm. And what size is yours? How many jars can you put in?
We can put in 2 layers.
Okay. Oh, they're big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're using pints, you can do 2 stacks. You have to buy an extra rack for each to do 2 layers.
Mm-hmm.
So with quarts, you can only do 1 layer, but with pints, you can do 2 layers.
Mm-hmm.
But I went and spent the extra $25 each on 2 of the rockers so that we could do the 10 pounds without having to sit in front of it.
Right. Okay.
It doesn't make any sense, especially if you're going to do, let's say I wanted to do the ratatouille or the spaghetti in pints. Those are processing at 70 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to watch something for 70 minutes. Now, they happen to be 15 pounds of pressure, so they wouldn't have been at 10 pounds. But still, it's the idea that a lot of things are going to be done at 10 pounds, and to give you a 15-pound rocker for your pressure cooker just doesn't seem right.
No, but that's a really high price for the rocker.
Wow. It is.
Wow.
And it's not even made by Presto.
It was the only
rocker that I could find mm-hmm. that was adjustable.
Mm-hmm.
And you take it apart and take these metal rings off to put on the weight that you want, whether it's going to be 5 pounds, 10 pounds, or 15 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, do you have any other advice about canning with a pressure cooker?
Yes, one that I found in, it was in the Presto book this year, and I had never heard of it, and it might work with the regular water bath canning too, and that was they suggested that you put 2 tablespoons of white vinegar in your canner water.
Mm-hmm.
Now that has not stopped completely the side of the canner jars from turning white.
Mm-hmm.
But it's done a lot for it. I think it might do better if there was more white vinegar in the jar.
Probably. That's probably
in the water.
Right. Because those, yes, can for pressure canning that long, you get a lot of calcium deposit if you have hard water, which we do.
Well, right. we're using the Culligan water saucer.
You are.
And still getting white on the outside mm-hmm. of the pressure cooker jars.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm wiping them off with vinegar.
Right. Okay, now, have you ever used the reusable canning jar lids? Or do you just use the regular ball flats
rings? I have used the reusable one-piece ones, too.
Oh, you have? Now, what brand are they?
I just bought some. And they don't have a brand on them, but I used to buy them from Sugar and Spice
mm-hmm.
in Fenimore. And they didn't have a brand, but I was buying them from the Mennonites, and they were white. And
right.
that's all I know. And I got some online in a box, and they're gold. And they don't have a brand on them either.
Oh.
But I'm gonna try those.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like the one-piece ones.
Can you use those again, or are they just one
yes.
time?
It says they're reusable.
Oh, that's great. Now
I actually used one of them on one of the spaghetti jars that was only half full or something, and it was warm, and we had it out on the counter, and then we wanted to have spaghetti last night, and I couldn't get the lid off. It sealed itself.
Oh, so it really sealed up tight. I was wondering, do they pop like the old flats used to do, or how do you know it sealed?
It poked itself down on the top.
Okay.
So they still do that. And yeah, and the white ones that I had from the Mennonites dinged in the middle, and I've used them many times over and over.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. Well, I think that's a wonderful idea to be able to reuse them. I've ordered some that are called Tattlers. They have they have a plastic lid. Maybe I won't do that again. I just don't want to do food that touches plastic anymore. So,
right.
But these have a plastic lid and a rubber ring, and then you use your own ball or Kerr the rings. Let's see. The jar rings that you screw on. So you have you have a flat and you have a rubber sealer.
Right.
And then you have your jar ring. And those do pretty well. But if you want to want to reuse them, maybe those aren't the ones you want to give away. Well, I guess you could. But with my Tattlers, I felt like I ended up giving them all away and then it didn't have all the pieces anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought it would be nice to give away ones with the one piece lid, so they, especially if it was jelly or something
mm-hmm.
like that they would have a lid to reseal while they were using it.
Right, and they can reuse it again. Okay, that's a great idea. Yeah. I'm talking with Peg Winky, and she is a friend of mine from rural Boscobel, and we're talking about canning. And, you know, preserving. And here we are in the beginning of October with lots and lots. We've had a wonderful bounty, haven't we, this year? We've had just amazing, especially fruits. People are just saying so many apples and pears. And also tomatoes. People are just giving away tomatoes. There's so many tomatoes. I didn't have a very good crop of tomatoes this year. I grew a lot fewer plants because I'm going for a smaller garden. But then I got one kind of tomato that was mostly skin and very convoluted and didn't have much didn't have much flesh. I said, where's the beef? So, and they also spoiled easily on the vine. So I won't grow those again, but that was an experiment, I guess, a different kind of a tomato. But I wondered how you do your beets. So would you tell me a little bit about the processing of beets?
Okay, the beets I didn't pickle. I just they had to be blanched and peeled, and then because the Amish like to grow big things, these beets were the biggest beets I ever saw. I had to cut them down a lot so that they would fit in this nice new big attachment of a food processor that I could stick on the front of my KitchenAid, and then it sliced them for me, and then I had to heat them up and heat up all the slices and then put them in the jars and pour hot water over them.
Now, did you have to add any acid to those?
No.
Okay.
Just boiling hot water.
Okay. And then they were just only barely cooked?
As a matter of fact, I didn't have to cook them.
Okay.
Because I think they were cooked by blanching them. Now
right.
I can't remember.
Okay. But anyway, you processed those in the pressure cooker.
Right.
So they definitely got cooked that way.
Yes.
So those were just not pickled, and you didn't.
No, care I didn't to pickle try them. Pickling them mm-hmm. this year, even though I do like pickled beets. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to fuss with trying to learn to pickle them this mm-hmm. year. I didn't have any of the pickling spices.
Right. So you didn't do pickles this year of any kind?
No.
Mm hmm. Okay, now I also wanted to know about apples. What did you do with your apples?
Okay, we haven't done much with the apples yet, other than that we did do apple butter earlier.
Now, what's the difference between applesauce and apple butter?
There's a lot more spices in the apple butter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's thicker.
Okay, so the applesauce, you're going to peel the apples. Peel those raw. No, or you cook them and then you run them through. How do you do that? I haven't done applesauce in a long time.
you're going to core them and peel them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to cook them.
Mm-hmm.
And add some sugar and spice, depending on mm-hmm. whether you're making them with no sugar or low sugar.
Mm-hmm. And then when they're cooked, they still aren't sauce, are they? Well, it depends on what kind of apples you use. I think different apples cook down more than others.
Right, and I will probably use a crock pot applesauce recipe, depending on how many I'm trying to cook at
mm-hmm.
once.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I did the apple butter this time, I used the blenderizer to soften all of the main part of it.
So was
but I did take the skin off first.
So is that a stick blender, or do you put it in a blender, or what?
No, a stick, an electric stick blender.
Mm-hmm. You're telling me you have a heavy one.
Yes.
You would
I got the Vitamix, and it's a little heavy for me only because I've had carpal tunnel and arthritis in my wrist, so
mm-hmm. So a little...
sometimes I just hand it to my husband and tell him to do it.
Okay, so the old-fashioned method was to get one of those cone things with a wooden tool that you twirl around inside the cone and you try to press the apples out of that?
Yeah, the strainer on a stand.
Mm-hmm. Or you could have that thing with a blade, you turn the handle. And so that was the old way. And I got a Victoria juicer strainer, which I couldn't even find for years. And I thought maybe I'd loaned it to somebody. But I was cleaning the other day, and I found it. But it is a wonderful tool, Vittorio juicer strainer. And you can use it for tomatoes, too. And it's great for getting the peels out. So once you've got something cooked, say you could do your tomatoes with the peels on, and then put it through the strainer, and it sends the peels and seeds out the end and strains it into a nice puree. And you can do that with the apples. So it's a wonderful tool to have, especially if you have a lot, because, you know, there's a lot of cleaning of it afterwards. But if you're going to do a big batch, it's well worth getting it out and setting it up. And it's the old ones were all metal. I noticed that the ones that are for sale now have a lot of plastic on them, and I can't imagine that they would last nearly as long.
Well, I do have that kind of attachment on the KitchenAid.
Oh.
And so I had it set up to send something through the other day, and we didn't use it, but it does have a place to send the seeds and stuff out one way and the puree out the other way.
Yeah, that can be really handy. I did want to talk a little bit about kitchen tools. It seems like you try a lot of things, or you research a lot of things, and you said you really do love your KitchenAid, and you have a lot of attachments. So tell us a little bit, what's the KitchenAid like? Is it like a blender? I don't even really know.
No, the KitchenAid is a really heavy duty kitchen mixer stand, and it has an attachment. It has attachments that you can buy in different series or packages to do almost anything you want. So there are pasta makers, sausage stuffers. It comes automatically with a whip blender, a dough blender, or a dough attachment. It has different shredder. Attachments. I've got a spiralizer attachment. You name it. But the latest one I bought was a big sized food processor that goes on the front and sliced the beets, which worked better than they had round slicing things that I used to use to shred carrots and things like that for salads and things, but I wasn't sure they were going to slice a beet big, you know, wide enough for canning. But this one did real well, and it also had a switch on the side so that while you were slicing, you could change the slice of the width. So if it wasn't slicing thick enough, you could move the switch from left to right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's on the KitchenAid new processor that sticks on the front of the KitchenAid stand.
So a KitchenAid is a pretty expensive kitchen utensil or appliance, but then you can add the different attachments you want. You don't have to keep buying a new appliance for everything.
Right.
So it's an investment.
Right. The KitchenAid probably was like $250-$300 years and years ago, and it's still almost that much just for the kitchen mixer stand. And whatever basics come with it. And every time you buy an attachment package, it's usually another hundred and something.
Mm-hmm.
So it is quite an investment, but mm-hmm. you end up with almost anything you could ever want in your kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And the KitchenAid powers all of those things. So you end up with one thing that plugs in.
Well, that, yes. We were talking about that.
Instead of having to have plug-ins all over your kitchen, mm-hmm. you have one thing that everything plugs into the front of it.
Mm-hmm. That's a good recommendation.
The two things that I did try this year is that I bought a little Hamilton Beach, it was called a stack and press, and it's a small processor, and it's three cups. And it was nice because you just put in your pieces of onion or garlic, and you just pressed on the top with your finger. And depending on how hard you pressed, you either got a nice chopping or you got liquid.
Well, just for two people.
Hard and you got liquefied, but
great. I haven't seen that.
And it might have been $18 or something. Mm-hmm.
But for just two people, you don't want to get out the great big, food processor. Yeah.
Right. You don't want to, drag the KitchenAid out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found one that I think I like a little better, which was a Redmond. And it didn't, other than that it said it had a 1,200 milliliter glass bowl, I can't describe it much better than that. The thing I liked was that it had a garlic clove skin remover.
Wow.
Just this little funky looking plastic thing that came with it, and it'll take the skin off up to 30 to 50 garlic cloves at once when you use that instead of the blades.
Wow, I'm looking to see if Jim is raising his eyebrows. Have you ever seen such a thing? When you cook for a crowd, that would be a handy attachment.
Right. The other thing that was interesting about that one was, and I haven't seen many things come with this, is the blades all came with blade protectors.
Uh-huh.
Which was nice. So in the glass bowl, there were four or five blades, and each one had a blade protector mm-hmm. on them that you had to take off before you could use it.
Mm-hmm.
Which was nice, because the first time I turned it on, the blade protectors were on, and the garlic thing was in there.
Oh, dear.
And if they weren't on there, I would have wiped out the garlic clove skinner.
Peg, I'm wondering, you have any suggestions of storing all these components and your KitchenAid? I mean, what do you have a pantry? Do you have a particular cupboard that you put everything in, or a drawer? What works best for you?
Well, my KitchenAid sits, the stand basically sits inside part of my Hoosier cupboard. Years ago, I bought an antique Hoosier cupboard that was actually made in Wisconsin. It's the right height for short people like me, so the wooden part that comes out is perfect for making pies and the right level for me canning things. And everything, all of its attachments sit in a cupboard next to it with most of my spices.
Oh, that's very nice. That's a nice way to do it. Have them all in one cupboard. So the KitchenAid is actually hidden.
Well, it's sitting where I can see it, mm-hmm. but the Hoosier cupboard has a couple shelves,
right.
And one of them has spices on it inside its doors,
mm-hmm.
and if I shut the doors, then I couldn't have the KitchenAid in there, but one of the shelves, the bottom shelf, has the KitchenAid and 10-pound Rubbermaid things full of white sugar and brown sugar and things like that. And
right.
That thing has a 25-pound thing of flour with a sifter.
So you don't have to lug that heavy KitchenAid around. It just stays in the same place all the time.
Right. I just lift it forward onto the wooden thing when I want to use it.
Mm-hmm.
Onto the wooden table or whatever you want to call it, wherever you would make your pie crust.
Mm-hmm.
Just lift it forward.
So you make pie crusts in there?
Well, yes.
You use your KitchenAid to make a pie crust?
To do part of it, yes.
Yeah.
To make the dough.
Right.
It has a dough hook.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Well, I've just really enjoyed talking with you, Peg. I've been talking to Peg Winky from Boscobel area, and thanks, Peg, for being on the show.
Well, you're welcome.
I've really enjoyed it, and I'm really looking forward to stopping in and visiting your kitchen.
Okay, and you'll have to come in and have some watermelon jerky.
Oh, that sounds Vern, like maybe something, yes. Vern does.
Yes, Vern dehydrated in the oven watermelon jerky because he found it on the internet and had to try it. It looks like bacon, and it tastes wonderful.
We didn't even get to that.
But I thought I'd stick it in because I thought you'd like it. Everybody who's tried it really likes it.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, thanks so much, Peg, and I hope
you're welcome. Keep
on enjoying all your canning. It sounds like you've got just many, many rows of jars.
Yep.
Okay.
You have a good day.
You too. And thank you so much, my listeners, for tuning in to Who's in the Kitchen. We're on at noon every Saturday, and we're going to be having a show dedicated to farming once a month on the last Saturday of the month called Digging In. It'll be totally devoted to farming, and I hope you'll remember that. And thanks for tuning in to WDRT 91.9 Community Radio from the ground up.